Chapter 5. Fellow travelers, no more of yesterday's howling over yonder today, sir, is there? ? I have heard none. ? Then you may be sure there is none. When these people howl, they howl to be heard. ? Most people do, I suppose. ? Ah, but these people are always howling. Never happy otherwise. ? Do you mean the Marseille people? ? I mean the French people. They're always at it. As to Marseille, we know what Marseille is. It sent the most insurrectionary tune into the world that was ever composed. It couldn't exist without allonging and marchonging to something or other, victory or death, or blazes, or something. The speaker, with a whimsical good humor upon him all the time, looked over the parapet wall with the greatest disparagement of Marseille, and taking up a determined position by putting his hands in his pockets, and rattling his money at it, apostrophized it with a short laugh. Allong and marchong, indeed. It would be more creditable to you, I think, to let other people allong and marchong about their lawful business, instead of shutting them up in quarantine. ? Tiresome enough, said the other. But we shall be out today. Out today. ? Repeated the first. It's almost an aggravation of the enormity, that we shall be out today. Out. What have we ever been in for? ? For no very strong reason, I must say. But as we come from the East, and as the East is the country of the plague, the plague. ? Repeated the other. That's my grievance. I have had the plague continually, ever since I have been here. I am like a sane man shut up in a madhouse. I can't stand the suspicion of the thing. I came here as well as ever I was in my life. But to suspect me of the plague, is to give me the plague. And I have had it and I have got it. You bear it very well, Mr. Meagles, said the second speaker, smiling. No. If you knew the real state of the case, that's the last observation you would think of making. I have been waking up night after night, and saying, now I have got it, now it has developed itself, now I am in for it, now these fellows are making out their case for their precautions. Why, I'd as soon have a spit put through me, and be stuck upon a cart in a collection of beetles, as lead the life I have been leading here. Well, Mr. Meagles, say no more about it now, it's over, urged a cheerful feminine voice. Over. Repeated Mr. Meagles, who appeared, though without any ill nature, to be in that peculiar state of mind in which the last word spoken by anybody else is a new injury. Over. And why should I say no more about it? Because it's over. It was Mrs. Meagles who had spoken to Mr. Meagles, and Mrs. Meagles was, like Mr. Meagles, comely and healthy, with a pleasant English face which had been looking at homely things for 55 years or more, and shone with a bright reflection of them. There. Never mind, father, never mind. Said Mrs. Meagles. For goodness sake, content yourself with Pet. With Pet? Repeated Mr. Meagles in his injured vein. Pet, however, being close behind him, touched him on the shoulder, and Mr. Meagles immediately forgave Marseille from the bottom of his heart. Pet was about 20. A fair girl with rich brown hair hanging free in natural ringlets. A lovely girl, with a frank face, and wonderful eyes. So large, so soft, so bright, set to such perfection, in her kind good head. She was round and fresh, and dimpled and spoilt, and there was in Pet an air of timidity and dependence which was the best weakness in the world, and gave her the only crowning charm a girl so pretty and pleasant could have been without. Now, I ask you, said Mr. Meagles in the blandest confidence, falling back a step himself, and handing his daughter a step forward to illustrate his question. I ask you simply, as between man and man, you know, did you ever hear of such damn nonsense as putting pet in quarantine? It is at the result of making even quarantine enjoyable. Said Mr. Meagles, that's something to be sure. I am obliged to you for that remark. Now, pet, my darling, you had better go along with mother, and get ready for the boat. The officer of health, and a variety of humbugs in cocked hats, are coming off to let us out of this at last. And all we jailbirds are to breakfast together in something approaching to a Christian style again, before we take wing for our different destinations. To ticker 'em, stick you close to your young mistress. He spoke to a handsome girl with lustrous dark hair and eyes, and very neatly dressed, who replied with a half-curtsy as she passed off in the train of Mrs. Meagles and Pet. They crossed the bare scorched terrace all three together, and disappeared through a staring white archway. Mr. Meagles' companion, a grave dark man of 40, still stood looking towards this archway, after they were gone, until Mr. Meagles tapped him on the arm. I beg your pardon, said he, starting. Not at all, said Mr. Meagles. They took one silent turn backward and forward in the shade of the wall, getting, at the height on which the quarantine barracks are placed, what cool refreshment of sea breeze there was at 7 in the morning. Mr. Meagles' companion resumed the conversation. May I ask you, he said, what is the name of the tickerum? Mr. Meagles struck in. I have not the least idea. Said the other, that tickerum? Suggested Mr. Meagles again. Thank you, that tickerum was a name, and I have several times wondered at the oddity of it. Why, the fact is, said Mr. Meagles, Mrs. Meagles and myself are, you see, practical people. That you have frequently mentioned in the course of the agreeable and interesting conversations we have had together, walking up and down on these stones, said the other, with a half-smile breaking through the gravity of his dark face. Practical people. So one day, 5 or 6 years ago now, when we took Pet to church at the Foundling, you have heard of the Foundling Hospital in London, similar to the institution for the found children in Paris? I have seen it. Well, one day when we took Pet to church there to hear the music because, as practical people, it is the business of our lives to show her everything that we think can please her mother, my usual name for Mrs. Meagles, began to cry so that it was necessary to take her out. What's the matter, mother? Said I, when we had brought her a little round. You are frightening Pet, my dear. Yes, I know that, father, says mother, but I think it's through my loving her so much that it ever came into my head. That ever what came into your head, mother? Oh dear, dear, cried mother, breaking out again, when I saw all those children ranged tier above tier, and appealing from the father none of them has ever known on earth, to the great father of us all in heaven. I thought, does any wretched mother ever come here, and look among those young faces, wondering which is the poor child she brought into this forlorn world, never through all its life to know her love, her kiss, her face, her voice, even her name. Now that was practical in mother, and I told her so. I said, mother, that's what I call practical in you, my dear. The other, not unmoved, assented. So I said next day, now, mother, I have a proposition to make that I think you'll approve of. Let us take one of those same little children to be a little maid to Pet. We are practical people. So if we should find her temper a little defective, or any of her ways a little wide of ours, we shall know what we have to take into account. We shall know what an immense deduction must be made from all the influences and experiences that have formed us no parents, No child, brother or sister, no individuality of home, no glass slipper, or fairy godmother. And that's the way we came by to Tikaram. Apostrophe, and the name itself apostrophe, by George. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Meagles, I was forgetting the name itself. Why, she was called in the institution, Harriet Beadle, an arbitrary name, of course. Now, Harriet we changed into Hattie, and then into Taddy, because, as practical people, we thought even a playful name might be a new thing to her, and might have a softening and affectionate kind of effect, don't you see? As to Beadle, that I needn't say, was wholly out of the question. If there is anything that is not to be tolerated on any terms, anything that is a type of jack-in-office insolence and absurdity, anything that represents in coats, waistcoats, and big sticks our English holding on by nonsense after everyone has found it out, it is a Beadle. You haven't seen a Beadle lately? Apostrophe, as an Englishman who has been more than 20 years in China, no. Apostrophe, then, apostrophe, said Mr. Meagles, laying his forefinger on his companion's breast with great animation. Don't you see a Beadle now, if you can help it? Whenever I see a Beadle in full fig, coming down the street on a Sunday at the head of a charity school, I am obliged to turn and run away, or I should hit him. The name of Beadle being out of the question, and the originator of the institution for these poor foundlings having been a blessed creature of the name of Coram, we gave that name to Pet's little maid. At one time she was Taddy, and at one time she was Coram, until we got into a way of mixing the two names together, and now she is always Tikaram. Apostrophe, your daughter, apostrophe, said the other, when they had taken another silent turn to and fro, and, after standing for a moment at the wall glancing down at the sea, had resumed their walk, is your only child, I know, Mr. Meagles. May I ask you in no impertinent curiosity, but because I have had so much pleasure in your society, may never in this labyrinth of a world exchange a quiet word with you again, and wish to preserve an accurate remembrance of you, and yours may I ask you, if I have not gathered from your good wife, that you have had other children? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no. No, apostrophe, said Mr. Meagles. Not exactly other children. One other child. Apostrophe, I am afraid I have inadvertently touched upon a tender theme. Apostrophe, never mind, apostrophe, said Mr. Meagles. If I am grave about it, I am not at all sorrowful. It quiets me for a moment, but does not make me unhappy. Pet had a twin sister who died when we could just see her eyes exactly like Pet's above the table, as she stood on tiptoe holding by it. Apostrophe, ah. Indeed, indeed. Apostrophe, yes, and being practical people, a result has gradually sprung up in the minds of Mrs. Meagles and myself which perhaps you may, or perhaps you may not understand. Pet and her baby sister were so exactly alike, and so completely one, that in our thoughts we have never been able to separate them since. It would be of no use to tell us that our dead child was a mere infant. We have changed that child according to the changes in the child spared to us, and always with us. As Pet has grown, that child has grown. As Pet has become more sensible and womanly, her sister has become more sensible and womanly by just the same degrees. It would be as hard to convince me that, if I was to pass into the other world tomorrow, I should not, through the mercy of God, be received there by a daughter, just like Pet, as to persuade me that Pet herself is not a reality at my side. Apostrophe, I understand you, apostrophe, said the other, gently. As to her, apostrophe, pursued her father, the sudden loss of her little picture and playfellow, and her early association with that mystery in which we all have our equal share, but which is not often so forcibly presented to a child, has necessarily had some influence on her character. Then, her mother and I were not young when we married, and Pet has always had a sort of grown-up life with us, though we have tried to adapt ourselves to her. We have been advised more than once, when she has been a little ailing, to change climate and air for her as often as we could, especially at about this time of her life, and to keep her amused. So, as I have no need to stick at a bank desk now, though I have been poor enough in my time, I assure you, or I should have married Mrs. Meagles long before, we go trotting about the world. This is how you found us staring at the Nile, and the pyramids, and the sphinxes, and the desert, and all the rest of it. And this is how Tetikaram will be a greater traveler in course of time than Captain Cook. Apostrophe, I thank you, apostrophe said the other, very heartily for your confidence. Apostrophe, don't mention it, apostrophe returned Mr. Meagles, I am sure you are quite welcome. And now, Mr. Clennam, perhaps I may ask you, whether you have yet come to a decision where to go next? Apostrophe, apostrophe, indeed, no. I am such a waif and stray everywhere, that I am liable to be drifted, where any current may set. Apostrophe, it's extraordinary to me, if you'll excuse my freedom in saying, so that you don't go straight to London, apostrophe said Mr. Meagles, in the tone of a confidential adviser. Perhaps I shall. Apostrophe, eh? But I mean with a will. Apostrophe, I have no will. That is to say, apostrophe he colored a little, next to none, that I can put in action now. Trained by main force, broken, not bent, heavily ironed with an object on which I was never consulted, and which was never mine, shipped away to the other end of the world, before I was of age, and exiled there until my father's death there, a year ago, always grinding in a mill I always hated. What is to be expected from me in middle life? Will, purpose, hope? All those lights were extinguished, before I could sound the words. Apostrophe, light 'em up again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Meagles. Ah, easily said. I am the son, Mr. Meagles, of a hard father and mother. I am the only child of parents who weighed, measured, and priced everything, for whom what could not be weighed, measured, and priced, had no existence. Strict people as the phrase is, professors of a stern religion, their very religion was a gloomy sacrifice of tastes and sympathies that were never their own, offered up as a part of a bargain for the security of their possessions. Austere faces, inexorable discipline, penance in this. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.